Welcome to What She Said. I'm your host, Lucy Lucroft, a journalist, blogger, podcaster based in Brighton, and you're listening to Series 4, Episode 4, Ethics in Blogging with Christabel Plummer. So before I jump into the episode, I want to dive right in and share my review of the week. So, my podcast review of the week is from the user MaddieD82. I'm going to call her Maddie. She says, or he says, I don't know, the guests are always fascinating and Lucy has a lovely way of putting them at ease, so the podcast flows like a natural conversation. Lucy also has that rare trait in the blogging and podcasting world that she's completely honest and transparent. She's not afraid to have an opinion while others sit on the fence. How nice is that? Nice, that's what. Full disclosure, I was having a really, really tough day. And when I came to have a look at my reviews and saw there was 3 brand new reviews in the past week, I was like, oh, amazing. And then I read the first one. I read all of them, but the first one, I was like, that is just so thoughtful and lovely. So thank you very much. So even if you don't think it makes a difference, I know it's such a pain to leave a review, and everybody constantly asks you to leave them a review. It makes such a difference to both the show, getting it out there for other people to hear, and also just, you've made my day. It keeps me going when I've been editing for hours. So thank you. You can leave your review by heading to the ratings and review tab on iTunes. If you just go to the to What She Said on iTunes, you can see a few different tabs. The second tab is ratings and reviews, and that's where you leave your review if you want to. Only 5-star reviews, please. If you really hate it, just move on. Just don't leave me a review at all, please. So back to today's episode. Today I chat with Christabel Plummer, who writes the travel and lifestyle blog I Want You to Know. She's an OG blogger who isn't afraid to be herself and stick her head above the parapet. She's honest, approachable, and really self-deprecating, and we chatted all about her blogging journey, why ethics are so important, and how blogging success comes in so many different forms. Enjoy.
Okay, well, I have been blogging for 10 years over at iwantyoutoknow.co.uk, and I think that my blog was just a natural continuation after growing up with GeoCities and MySpace and Bebo and Zanga, and even, you know, even more obscure sites. Like, I've always been quite internet-y. I used to write home and away fan fiction. It's not very cool.
Wow.
But I'm admitting it. And I think I've always just loved finding different communities online. As soon as I got the internet, I was like, I'm going to make my own website. I'm going to write a story every month. And had friends, they would leave comments in the guest book. And, you know, other people who weren't friends as well, they would love to tease me. But I think early on, I was just used to doing my own thing, even if it wasn't cool or the thing to do. I just felt a passion for creating and putting it on the internet. So I started my blog in December 2008. I was studying fashion knitwear design at the time. And I just thought, you know, I might as well join in. I've got a point of view. I'd started to discover lots of personal style blogs. So in the early days, I read Style Bubble. There was another blog called Flying Saucer. There were loads of American bloggers, and I used to go on the Fashion Spot forums, and people were sharing their outfits there as well and linking to their blogs. So I just felt so inspired by the community of real people, just real in inverted commas, of course, but they were sharing their style, you know, what they were buying. And even though I studied fashion and I had fashion, you know, obsessed friends, we didn't often talk about personal style. So this was just a place for me to really connect with other like-minded people. So in the early days, my blog was very much diary-like. I would vent about uni work, applying to placements, getting rejected from placements. I think there was a post, it's called Put a Smile on My Face, very angsty. But, you know, it was just such a cool creative outlet at the time. And at first it was quite solitary. I was living in, you know, a uni flat share situation that was not ideal. So I was just always in my room on the internet getting inspired. And then gradually I started to go down to events in London. So not only did I meet other bloggers, but I started to meet brands as well. And it was really interesting to go to these press events and get goodie bags. Like when you're a student, goodie bags are like the best thing ever. Yeah. Free stuff just for attending an event, and free drinks as well. Like also, you know, when you're a student, that is what you want. So basically it was just drinking, getting the free stuff, meeting new people as well. It can be so hard to make friends outside of your existing networks, such as uni, school, work. And I just ended up making, you know, so many friends. It was just such a great situation. So, yeah, I kept going. I just felt this very strong connection to the, you know, world of blogging and creating content. I eventually did get a job in knitwear design, but I felt like it wasn't right for me in that form. You know, I didn't think that I could fit into an established company that would perhaps rip off designs from smaller designers. And some of those designers I was getting to meet at Fashion Week, it just didn't sit well with me. So I thought, you know, if I can't design in the way I want to, I'd rather not do it. And now I realize, I guess I wanted to be a creative director, which is a bit different to a, you know, a fashion designer that's doing the tech packs and the measurements. You've got to be precise. You've got to know how certain pieces fit together. You know, I think I just wanted a really creative role that's a bit more overarching. And mm-hmm. I feel like blogging and content creation and everything in between, like it's what I'm meant to be doing.
At what stage did you, because now obviously not only are you a full-time blogger, but you also do consulting, you speak. Your role has probably become much wider than you expected it to be when you first started. Well, certainly when you first started writing Home and Away fan fiction, I imagine that you didn't think necessarily that this was going to be your career trajectory.
Definitely not. And there's no Home Away, and there's no Home and Away fan fiction on the blog, just to clarify. That was I was 15. That I'm hoping it's not on the internet.
No judgment. I'm still a huge Home and Away fan.
I know, it's so funny.
So at what stage did blogging become more than just blogging? Did it become a viable career for you?
Ooh, that's an interesting one, because it all happened very gradually. I think I had my first paid project in 2012, and at that point I was used to gifting and just being happy to go to events and, you know, get the odd goodie bag. And at that point I just didn't really know about all the other things going on. I saw other people doing it full time and I thought I'd love to do a bit of that, but I had no idea how to make it my job. Mm-hmm. And then I was umming and ahhing for a little while. I was working at a company and I wasn't, you know, passionate about what I was doing. And I just felt like I was in limbo and I didn't know what to do. And then fortunately my contract came to an end, and it was quite weird at the time, but it was a positive thing in the end, because it really forced me to make a decision and think about what I wanted to do. So I went traveling for a bit around Southeast Asia. That was great. It made me create more travel content and think about my spin on that. And then I came home, and luckily I lived with my parents in London, so didn't have to worry about rent or food. But yeah, I didn't really have a plan, and that was strange. After doing so many years of education, I didn't have a plan. And I was getting dribs and drabs coming through, like a few, I think there was an eBay project, there might have been a Grazia thing. I think because I got into it quite early, you know, my name would come up on a lot of lists and in search results. So that's great. And I guess I was associated with other people that maybe had bigger followings, but because I was seen with them, you know, brands would think, ooh, okay, let's contact her. So that was great as well. So I had a few little things. And at the time, I think I never had massive like financial aspirations. Like I wanted to be a knitwear designer. That's not typically, you know, a big money job. So I never, you know, I think I spoke about this on my Instagram stories. I've always had a bit of a weird attitude towards money, and I'm just happy if there is money, basically. Mm. You know, when I got my graduate job, I didn't negotiate or anything. I just thought, yes, money, there is money. I'm happy, there is money. So I probably lived off very little, but at the time I was like, oh yeah, this is fine. Like when dribs and drabs come in, but you're not looking at the bigger picture, you can think you're fine, but then you add it up at the end of the year and you're like, actually, this is, you know, not the salary that some of my friends are earning. But I was happy. I was content, and it took a while to understand the financial side, and a lot of things just happened in a serendipitous way. I think, you know, I got contacted by the Metro and BuzzFeed, I think, in early 2014 about freelance writing. So then I thought, ooh, okay, maybe I could do this. So there were lots of different opportunities that came. And I also did a course on freelancing as well that helped me learn a bit more about the financial side. So it's only really been viable in the past two or three years. But mm-hmm. I think earlier on, I wasn't necessarily earning as much as other people, but I was still happy because I was fulfilled in other ways. And yeah, you're more than just your salary. So I've kind of done things backwards, basically.
No, I think a lot of people are doing it the exact same way, but just because so many people don't speak about it, and they don't speak about that element of the real nitty gritty of finance and money, that we just all presume that everybody else is doing it better than us, or everybody else is doing it to a different level. And I would certainly agree that you're more than your salary. And you kind of got to find what the marker point for success is for you. Like you say, you didn't go in, your original career plan wasn't, you know, you weren't aiming to be the richest knitwear designer in the world. You wanted to be a knitwear designer for certain reasons. And blogging is the exact same thing. I really relate to that. I feel like none of us really decide to pick up a side hustle, or I hate that term, but it explains it properly, or become freelance for the reason of becoming rich. It's normally because we want to strike a balance in our life that we don't currently have with a traditional office job. That's what I think. That's my personal opinion on it. And I've got so many opinions on it and how the patriarchy is trying to screw us over with that. But we'll probably get to that.
Yeah, that's definitely true. And you realize you end up working so much more. Dread to think what my hourly rate is, because if I told that to other people, they'd probably be like, oh, actually, I won't do that. I won't give up, you know, having proper holidays or whatever. And I know it's an interesting job, and I never want to moan, because I know there are people with very challenging jobs. I think it's challenging in a different way, but I don't obviously do it for that. I do it for so many other reasons, and I like to think I'm building upon something. And I've learned so much about myself through doing it. I've learned that I'm quite, you know, fulfilled by other things rather than money, like being true to myself, basically. Cliched, but obviously I stopped being a knitwear designer because I thought, if I can't do it in the way I want to, I'm not going to do it. And I think that just carries me through with everything I do.
Yeah, I thought that was really interesting when you mentioned that at the beginning, that comparing kind of the big brands to smaller brands and contrasting them, and that was really a bit of a guiding light for you. And that is so prevalent in how you talk about things on Instagram, and just you can see in your attitude and your approach to blogging, that another word that I really don't like using, but it's just perfect, is authenticity. And that's really, I think, as influencers, whether you regard yourself as an influencer or not, we're really held to quite a high standard, a higher standard than others. And the marker point for whether we are, I don't know, good or bad, it seems to be authenticity.
Yes. It's an interesting one, because I can only be me. Like, it's, I don't even know where to start with this, but I just know I'm not the girl that people think, oh, she's so cool. I don't want to make people feel bad about themselves. So that's what kind of drives me. And I've never been the most beautiful girl or the most popular girl. You know, I've been the weird one doing random things, sometimes getting teased. And that's fine. I think that still drives me in what I do. And I don't put out content to make people think I'm amazing. Like, I know I'm not some Insta model, and that's fine. I'm just being myself, and I kind of want to treat others how I wish I want to be treated, and I don't want people to feel bad about themselves. So that's what drives me. And if people think that's authentic, that's great. But But it is, yeah, it's bandied around a lot. There was a Guardian article, I think, last week. And
oh, every day, I think the Guardian like to write an article, don't they?
And it's just like, oh, influencers, they're authentic now. And it's like, no, a lot of us were always that way.
Yeah.
It's not just a new thing.
Yeah.
It's being yourself. It's common sense. Like, I'm not going to lie about anything to build a following. I'm just going to be myself. I'm just doing what I feel is right.
One of the things that I think about authenticity, which can get really blurry in the influencer world, is that when everybody starts out, nowadays, I think there are a set of people who start out with the intention of being a full-time blogger. So that might be their goal from day one, which is different for people who started out before it was kind of a thing, because you just couldn't start out with that intention because you didn't know it was a thing. And there's no judgment at all from me of people starting out to make it their career. But when that happens, I think that there's so much noise out there that there wasn't years and years ago, telling you that you must do this. You only have to look on Pinterest to see pins saying I see this a lot, and it really irritates me. The 10 mistakes new bloggers make, or do these things to make sure that you don't look like a new blogger, things like that. And so I think that's where authenticity can become much more than just being yourself, because you can easily become completely lost and think that yourself isn't good enough, and who is yourself? Do you know what I mean?
This is all very deep. This is all very deep at the moment. There's so much advice out there, I say that in adverted commas, and so much focus on growth. And I think I even heard yesterday, apparently Kim Kardashian did a Loop giveaway, apparently it's been deleted. But it's just so frustrating, because if you really think about the end result, like, rather than the vanity metric, you know, fair enough, if you do a Loop giveaway, people may follow you because they're going to win a holiday to the Maldives, but they're going to unfollow you like a week after that.
Yeah.
And what are you left with? Like, you had the inflated numbers for a while, but then they're gone. And if you want brands to work with you and pay you, you need to have real people there. You need to connect with real people. So I think everyone needs to remember why they're doing this. It's not just about the vanity metrics. You know, if we really think about it, like, you need real people there. And you can write all of the advice posts and, you know, tell people to buy followers and do all these dodgy things. But in the end, you need to connect with real people. Like, they need to be there. And you really need a foundation. Otherwise, there's just no point.
A big thank you to this week's sponsor, Write Now Cards. Write Now Cards are affirmation cards for writers to help you build and enjoy your writing practice. Whether you're working on your first novel, writing your blog, writing professionally as a copywriter, editing your 10th book, or just curious about starting to write, Write Now Cards are designed to help you feel more positively about you and your writing. Designed and created by Frankie Thompson, a blogger, author and freelance writer, and also just an amazing human. That's just an aside from me. They've really, really helped me push through some serious writing block. Born out of Frankie's battle with postnatal depression and anxiety, which came about after the birth of her first son, that stuck around and really pooped on other things she loved most, like writing, Write Now Cards were initially Frankie's way of getting back into writing while recovering. They worked so well, she started to share them with other writers, and so Write Now Cards was born. As a special offer, 5 What She Said listeners will get the mini classic collection for just $12 on a first-come, first-served basis. Please quote What She Said when placing your order. You can follow Write Now Cards at Write Now Cards on Instagram for daily writing affirmations, tips and inspiration. And you can order your own pack of Write Now Cards by going to bit.ly, so bit.ly, Write Now Cards, or follow the link in the show notes. And you can meet Frankie on her blog, as thebirdfliesblog.com. So in terms of things that really helped you boost your blog, and I don't just mean what made you get the numbers that you have, or that kind of were the turning points for your blog success? Was there anything in particular, or was it simply a gradual slog? In the best sense of the word, because it is a fun slog, but...
Yeah, I think it's definitely been gradual, but there were glimmers of, you know, exciting things that kind of kept me going. So I had an agent, I think in 2014, so that kind of, that gave me a lot of confidence, I think, that I must be doing something right. I also got on the Evening Standard Power 1000 list. That was in 2013. And at the time, they got my age wrong. So they put me in the 25 under 25 category. But I was 26. I'd literally just turned 26. Had a bit of a, I was going through my quarter life crisis, and I didn't believe the accolade, which is crazy because, you know, other people may think, okay, they got the age wrong, but I'm just going to take that. I'm going to run with it.
Yeah.
I'm going to PR it. But at the time, I didn't really think of it in that way. And it was interesting as well, because prior to that, I had been featured in the Evening Standard. And I didn't realize, it's only when I went to an event and someone had mentioned it, because they had a copy there. And I was like, oh my God, let me run out and get 10 copies. So that's, you know, I started to get recognized by external sources. And it made me think, okay, I must be doing something right. You know, there were other, you know, brand collaborations. I worked with Bowdoin quite early on, so that was in 2014. And, you know, I started to get travel opportunities. So I think it has been gradual. Like, there's always been signs, but I don't have the massive numbers that you may expect, like on Instagram. So I think it's just, you know, an example of an alternative way of being a content creator, because, you know, there are actresses. We've got Cameron Diaz, Jennifer Aniston, Lupita Nyong'o, but then you also have actresses in theatres and in other places as well, and they're still valid and you can be fulfilled. So I think it's good to just present other ways of doing this.
That's, you know, a really good way of looking at it, actually. I've never thought about that.
And I think traditional media, they love to focus on numbers. Like, any article I do, it'll mention the amount of followers you have or the amount of traffic. Like, they're very much, they think in headlines,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, things have to be summed up quickly. But there's so much more to it than just a headline. And I think that's what's great about blogging. You know, you don't have to have a particular angle sometimes, you know, like a, I don't know, like a Good Morning Britain segment. You can be in the middle, you know, there can be nuance.
Mm-hmm.
You just chat about things, that's fine. And, you know, that's what I love about it.
That is kind of blown my mind. I never really thought about just the example when you were talking about actresses. I've never thought about blogging like that, but that's so true. But it can feel very, you're right, the nuance can be completely taken out, and it can feel very linear that we're all on a journey towards a number, when actually, yeah, it's not really about that. It's about the fact that each one of us is completely individual, and we all offer different things, even down to the type of content that we write. But on the flip side, what have been the big stumbling blocks that you found throughout your blogging career? Have there been any?
Oh gosh, so many. I think self-doubt, you know, productivity. Just, there's just so much. I think, yeah, my self-doubt is definitely the biggest. It stops me from doing so many things. Like, it's so weird. I'll have an idea and then I'll try and work on the idea, and then I'm like, oh no, why are you doing that? No one wants to hear that. Why are you doing that? It's just crazy. Like, I can quite often go through these confidence crises, and it's really tough to sort of pick myself back up again.
Mm.
And equally, productivity. I feel like there's something I'm trying to reach and I never reach it. Like, I've realized a lot about myself through doing this. I'm quite self-critical. I'm a perfectionist. I never thought that was me, because when I was younger, I obviously didn't look it up in the dictionary, and I thought, oh, it means I'm perfect. I'm obviously not perfect, so I'm not a perfectionist. And then I learned the definition and I thought, okay, that is actually me. So yeah, it feels like I'm always striving for something that I can never reach, because I've set the goalposts way too high.
Mm.
So it's now I'm aware I can try and tackle that.
Self-doubt is a really tough one though, isn't it? Because particularly for somebody who works solo? I'm presuming you don't have a team around you in like a little, you know, home office. But you might do, so I probably shouldn't presume. But
there's no team. There's no team. I'm a team of one. I have some very, you know, supportive friends, but they have other jobs. So
so day to day, when it's just you on your own at home, I mean, I know for myself, when you're creating stuff that is putting your face out there and also putting your feelings out there and being vulnerable, oh, it can be a real killer when self-doubt rears its ugly head, which yeah, I relate completely, and I'm sure a lot of people listening to the podcast will as well. But it didn't surprise me when you said that, because I think you are very, I don't know, I want to say humble, or you're very approachable online. Like your personality feels very approachable, but also with a hint of self-deprecation. That's what I've picked up for sure.
that's quite accurate, yeah.
Which I think is really, really lovely. It's obviously a really lovely quality that you have, but not to say just don't believe in yourself, because that's a really nice quality, but you know what I mean? Like that's also a really lovely quality that you have that makes you super accessible and approachable. I think for some people, they might look at you and think, oh, but she's so successful. I've heard of her for years and et cetera. So how can you have self-doubt? And how do you push through and, you know, work with brands and put yourself out there when you're having a crisis of confidence?
It is really tough, but then I do manage to pull myself out of it, even if I am, you know, procrastinating, which always happens, because I think, oh, it's not the right time, or, you know, this isn't perfect. You know, I might end up procrastinating, and then I come across an article that's actually relevant and relates to what I'm doing, and then it kind of spurs me on. Or I may mention something to someone in passing, and they actually give me a dose of reality. You know, because I do go to a co-working space, but even then I can quite often keep to myself, mm-hmm. and not mention what's going on. So I found that by opening up, like, it's the simplest thing, but it can be really tough.
Yeah.
Because in my head, I'm telling myself, like, why are you trying to do this thing? Or, you know, I might have had an interaction with a brand and I may think, oh, I've ruined it forever. But then I talk to someone else and they're like, oh, no, it's probably fine. And I, you know, I get a sense of perspective. So I think just confiding in other people, you know, if you have a support group, you know, there's lots of communities online. There's also lots of blogging chats that you can be a part of, and then you can find other people through that. I also have a notebook that sort of reminds me of why I'm doing what I'm doing. Sometimes you can forget. So I have my mission statement. I have, you know, things that I focus on, my content pillars, and I've literally just written, why do I do this, on a page. And it's a great reminder when I'm in a, you know, a bit of a mess.
These are brilliant, brilliant tips. I love that you have them to hand as a visual reminder of why you're doing what you're doing. And the content pillars, because I also constantly pull myself back to my cornerstone content, because that when you're stuck trying to come up with content, or you're having a creative kind of boom and you're like, I want to write this, and then I don't know about you, but I get a bit overwhelmed and do nothing.
Oh yeah, that happens. That happens a lot. And I think also accepting that's part of your process, yeah. and building it in. It's taken me a while to realize this, but I think obviously I had to go through several, you know, several scenarios to get to this point, but I've just accepted, you know, maybe I'll come to my co-working space. I might have an hour of, you know, bit of Twitter time, but then maybe I'll see something that inspires me, or, you know, I'll read something and that will help me. So I try and build it into my process. I try and break up blog posts into bullet points as well. Like, so if I'm having a bad, like, writing day, thinking, oh my God, I can't write, I've got the bullet points and I've got a starting point. So yeah, I've come up with lots of different tools to help me, but it still happens. Yeah. I think I'm pulling myself out quicker.
I love that. You've got so many good, like, things in your kit to kind of help you get out of your own way. It's really good practical tips. Also, with all the podcasts, everything will be in the show notes, so you can go straight there, even though they're in the same niche as me, and I should, you know.
But it's great.
My competitors.
It's really interesting to dip into everything that's out there, and a lot of those are American too, think two or three of the podcasts I've recommended, and sometimes it's nice to have a British perspective, you know, British accents, and that's good as well.
I wanted to talk about ethics in blogging, because I feel like this year, no, hang on, we're 2019, so probably 2018, back end of 2018, when some new rules came in, and 2019, and maybe even before then, with GDPR, things have felt very much like we as influencers are being squeezed into tighter and narrower holes. And you mentioned the Guardian article, which I spoke about on my stories, because again, traditional media, particularly the Guardian at the moment, are doing pretty much an article a week about influencers and how terrible they are, or influencers are authentic, or, you know, perhaps there's a big row on Twitter because an influencer emailed a restaurant and they get called a blagger. And I just, you broke and continue to break this down on your stories when you do your TED Talks about it. And that was when I first kind of, you first came to my attention, I guess, in a way. I'd heard of you before then, but then I was like, oh my God, you're amazing. You have to be on the podcast and we have to talk about this.
Oh, wow.
So I'd love to get your take on it. I mean, that is a huge question, but...
It's a huge question. I know. It's interesting. It's definitely made me read up a lot. I'm still learning. And I think initially I was just like, oh my God, I've got to label everything. It looks like my life is gifted. It looks like I'm being paid for everything. Oh my God, what's everyone going to think? But then I started to read it and I started to digest it. And obviously the consumer needs to know the relationship that you may have with a particular brand, you know, to inform their decision. Like, that's the bare bones of it. And in the early days of blogging, you know, I'd be gifted things, but early on we did say, like, this was gifted, or was mainly like courtesy of, and that was easy to display in a blog post because you had control over where it was. Whereas in Instagram, you know, it truncates your caption, so you may see two lines of that caption. So it was frustrating that I would have to start off explaining what was going on and no one would see my caption. I think with Instagram, you know, everything counts, like the image counts, the caption counts, the time of day is so important, you know, when you post. So to think that my caption was going to, you know, have to be sacrificed, that was annoying. But then I thought, okay, let me understand this. Let me read up on this. And I know that press seem to be held to different standards. Mm. You know, from what I understand, they have the same rules and regulations, but it's just maybe not enough people are reporting it. And I think the best thing about the blogging industry is that we've shone a light on everything, you know, all of the press trips, all of the events that go on behind the scenes, all of the gifting, like, this has always happened, but we just never knew. And I think that's really empowered me as a consumer. And I think it's about us being open with our audiences about this.
Yeah.
It's an opportunity to really help everyone understand the world of marketing, because it's all basically marketing, which is crazy that I would start a blog at the age of 21 and not know that I was marketing. Like, the rules apparently were always there, but I wasn't to know. No one wants to know. Like, it's a crazy thing, but I think with most things they just evolve naturally and the laws and the rules have to adjust. So yeah, I think it's an interesting opportunity. I think, you know, it may be a bit harsh in some ways, you know, just declaring if you've bought something but you were previously working with a brand, like, surely you bought it because you love the brand, even though you worked with them before, because you love the brand,
yeah,
you know, but it is what it is.
And I agree with you. I think ultimately it comes down to the consumer having 100% transparency when it comes to informing their decision. And I think most people are really comfortable with that, even if it's annoying. It can be quite annoying, particularly on Instagram. Like you say, just from a technical point of view, well, not even just from a technical point of view, people, when they see ad, you lose engagement already. And I honestly believe that the way the traditional media portrays it and how negative people are about influencers are the reason that people focus more mm-hmm. on how an influencer is, how what an influencer's relationship with a brand is like, and whether they're following the rules, than whether they go into their magazine and look at all the adverts in it and then think, oh, I wonder how much, I don't know, LVMH, for example, has taken up of the Roundup space, as and let's have a look at how much ad space they're paying for, because that might not be contravening a direct rule, but I mean, the editor and the person planning the magazine, and I'm a journalist, so I've seen it from this mm-hmm. side. I've been told I can't have a certain brand in a Roundup piece that I've done because they're not an award winner. Mm. As in, not the magazine that's award winner. And so I've had to take them out and put in. So, you know, and I never in it, I suppose you could say that most people would see that that's fairly obvious, but there's nowhere that I wrote, by the way, the all of this was gifted to me and all of these brands are in there because they work with us as a magazine.
Yeah, I've been reading that. I've been, you know, apparently it's obvious that a magazine is commercial and it's not obvious, you know, for content creators and influencers. But yeah, you know, if you're reading an article from someone like Sally Hughes, you assume it's her opinions. I mean, okay, that's just an example. I know she works for The Guardian, might be different to the glossies, but you assume that if you're following a certain journalist and, you know, you respect their, what they're featuring, you assume it's because they have a connection with it. Mm. But there's so much going on behind the scenes that we don't know about. You know, I've heard this as well. I've been on press trips with journalists and they've admitted that there is hidden advertising and we're expected to know that. But I wouldn't have known that unless I was doing what I'm doing now. So I don't think the consumer would know that either.
Yeah.
So it's really interesting. I think it's such an interesting time for media. And I think there is an opportunity for bloggers and influencers to be more transparent about their processes and how they make money and, you know, the decisions behind each project they take, because I think that's where some of the backlash is coming from. Mm. Also, I was listening to A Drink with James, which is the YouTube series by the founder of Fourcard, which is an influencer platform. And he was saying that a lot of people are, you know, resentful towards influencers because it seems easy, mm. like so achievable. You know, anyone could post a picture, but this person is being paid X amount to do it. So there's a lot of jealousy there, I think. And whereas with an actress, you know that there's, you know, a degree of talent and you think, okay, I couldn't do that. Or a singer as well. Like, you know, if you're not a singer, you're not going to be like Beyonce. But with influencers, it seems so attainable. And I think that's where a lot of the backlash stems from. But really, we just took a chance. You know, some of us started off on MySpace and then graduated to websites and then just stuck with it. And people just need to accept that.
Yeah, I completely agree. But I think there's also, I do think there's a lot of misunderstanding about how hard it is, how hard the job is. And also there's a level of misunderstanding about what exactly is involved in every collaboration, and the reason that there's a lot of misunderstanding about it is because there's no rule book. Yeah, there are rule books in terms of, you know, your transparency and all the rest of it, but there is no rule book as to how much you charge for X amount of words. I mean, that's the same in a magazine as well, of course, but there's no, whereas, you know, magazines, journalists have a union that they can sign up to where there's kind of national average rates all disclosed, so you can get a bit more of an idea about it, and there's professional codes of conduct that isn't in blogging.
Mm-hmm.
So that it becomes really murky waters, so people are able to just assume what everybody's getting paid and how much work has gone into it, because I suppose the reality is the two of us could do a collaboration with the exact same brand, produce on paper the exact same content, and be paid completely differently for it, mm-hmm. even under the same campaign. Because I don't know about you, but I know that brands have profited from the fact that we all keep things quiet to kind of protect ourselves. I'm not saying you and me necessarily, but it's the two of us bringing this whole thing down.
Oh, it's all my fault. I knew it. Oh gosh, I've ruined something again.
Do you know what I mean though? Because a brand can go to a blogger, and I know this from experience, a brand can go to a blogger and, you know, maybe they say we haven't got budget, and they come back and say, well, you know, my rates are this, and they're like, okay, well, we'll pay you this, and then they might pay their friend a completely different rate because maybe the friend says, okay, yeah, I'll accept that. So I think, and of course we have a responsibility ourselves to be more open and honest with each other, but at the same time, who is profiting? And the people that are profiting tend to be big companies.
Yeah, and this has taught me so much about big businesses and the fact that creativity isn't often valued. Mm. You know, even working in design, like the person at the top has a very different mindset to the designer that's doing all the measurements and the fittings and everything. Like, it's crazy that the people with the ideas are not reaping the benefits. And it's made me want to change that and really empower myself as a creative and others. Because brands are making money out of you. There's all these influencer platforms that are saying, you know, we'll gift you one thing, or you have to buy the product and you may get paid to do the campaign. Yeah. And it might only be like, you know, a very small amount of money that's not really a decent hourly rate, especially if you have to factor in paying tax on that and a mm-hmm. photographer and travel costs. Like, this company is profiting from you. I read about another one today and they were saying, you know, we work with micro influencers, or, you know, we gift them because it's authentic, but it's still a marketing campaign. You're still being paid by the brands as a big company, yet the people doing the work are not reaping the benefits. So I've learned so much. I'm still learning. I think I need to actually read a business book because I'm trying to piece it all together. And I think ultimately some of the people that can be really successful in business, they don't have that heart or that empathy, like that connection, which is a shame. And I would love to change like how businesses run. I'm not making this easy for myself, but I think there is a way to run a business and not exploit people.
Yeah, I agree. And it probably does start with us. There was a conversation being had with a couple of people that I follow about they're very small brands, kind of one girl bands, and about paying people for their work. So this particular person, Bridie, she has a really beautiful clothing brand called Wild Flora, and she was talking about organizing photo shoots, and, you know, the values that she's trying to hit are diversity, inclusivity, and paying people a fair wage, so she doesn't just get people in and give them product in exchange for their work. And she said, yes, this makes it harder to organize, and it also is expensive for me to do this because I'm a small brand, so it does hit my bottom line, but that is the only way I'm prepared to do it, because if I expect people to invest in my business, and if I'm, you know, a sustainable fashion is kind of her ethos as well, then she has to pay people for their work, because otherwise it's not sustainable. So it's hard, but that's the kind of ethos that I take for myself as well, which I haven't always, because I'm learning as well, and especially about my intersectional feminism and digging deep into, is it really intersectional if your podcast, for example, isn't diverse? Can you really call yourself an intersectional feminist? So that's a ramble really about my thoughts.
Yeah, I think I just see this designer. It's really interesting because I accept, yeah, small businesses, you know, I see myself as a small business, mm-hmm. but if I'm going to pay for my Adobe membership, then it makes sense to, you know, pay others. Like, it's crazy how some things are factored in, but not others, you know, like the hosting, or, you know, the materials that you may use to make something. And it's so important, because that creative that you pay can then invest in their business and what they're doing, and they can pay someone else, and it helps everyone grow. And I know there are situations where you may collaborate with someone who's on the same level with you. It's quite mutual, you know, that's fine. But I think it's just so important to value each other as creatives.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think that's a perfect point to end the podcast on as well. So where can everybody find you online?
So my blog is iwantyoutoknow.co.uk. And then I'm on Instagram, Twitter, Pinterest, at I'm Christabel. That's with a K and one L. And if you type Christabel into YouTube, you will see lots of videos with my travels and behind the scenes of blogging and everything in between.
Thank you so, so much for being a part of the podcast.
Thanks for having me. I think I could have chatted for like another hour, but this is great.
Thank you so much for listening to the episode. I hope you enjoy it. You can get in touch with me on Twitter or Instagram. I'm at Lucy Lou Craft. I'd love you to leave a review for the show if you have time. All of the information that we chatted about in this episode is in the show notes. You can find everything at lucylucraft.com/podcast. See you next week.